Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Deanne Penn at United Nations headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's program, empowering young women to speak up for their right to reproductive health services. And could creating more women religious leaders help prevent genocide and other atrocities? But first, women and children are urging authorities in South Sudan to restore peace in the town of Yei. Violence between government and opposition forces, which erupted last year, has forced thousands to flee. Yei was once the country's breadbasket, and it's practically a ghost town now, according to the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS. The ongoing insecurity means that people cannot tend their crops, and they're going hungry. Mary Solomon is a member of the Mothers Union.
The hunger in Yei is, you know, forcing women to go outside the town. And it is really impossible for us as women to go outside. But because of our children, we really want to rescue them from dying. We go outside and, you know, we endanger our lives. Once you go outside the town, 5 miles or 3 miles, you are abducted.
The Christ the King School somehow managed to remain open despite the turmoil. Several children have found refuge there. Some are orphans, like Esther Quinton.
I don't have parents. I am the one who supports myself in education. But now I don't have anything to support myself in education.
14 teachers have remained behind at Christ the King School, volunteering their time and providing the children with a sense of security amid the dire conditions. Besides going hungry, people have been abducted, raped, and murdered while buildings were looted. Taban Emmanuel Elisa is a teacher at the Catholic school.
We cannot surrender. That was the one of our motto of the school. Even if problems are like that, education must continue. And so that generation to come should not face the challenge that we are in.
The UN mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, is exploring the possibility of establishing a base in Yei. Mission Chief David Shearer recently visited the town and listened to the concerns voiced by political, religious, and community leaders.
Everything that you would want is here, and yet it's been destroyed by war, and 70% of its population is no longer here. They're in refugee camps or displaced. That's a real tragedy. So whatever we can do to try and support bringing Yei back to what it was, we will try and do. But it requires us to be able to have the access into the surrounding countryside, and also to be able to talk to the people we need to talk to. And that means the opposition as well as the government-supported sides as well.
When it comes to young women's right to access reproductive health care, knowledge is power, according to an activist from Zimbabwe. Ashley Ngwenya is part of a youth coalition called Act 2030, which advocates for better policies in the areas of sexual and reproductive health education and services. She was at the UN this week to take part in a high-level forum on the Sustainable Development Goals, which aim to create a more just and equitable world for all people by 2030. Ashley spoke to Liz Kafidi about her efforts to empower young women, particularly in the fight against HIV and AIDS.
The major thing that really affects women when we talk about HIV is the age of consent. We talk about issues where they cannot access sexual reproductive health services that will protect them from HIV, that will give them medication for HIV, the ARVs, because they need parental consent.
ARVs?
Antiretrovirals. The greatest challenge for women would be the age of consent and empowerment, because young women are not empowered enough to access their services. So what we do as Act 2030 is mainly work on policy issues and creating spaces for young people to participate, which means we empower young women to speak for themselves. So as much as we talk of empowerment being a voice for young people, we also talk about enabling the voice within the young women. When you enable a young woman, it means that that young woman will stand up for their education. When the young woman is educated, they will know that there's the age of consent, and they need to rally behind the change of the age of consent, meaning they will access sexual reproductive health, they will get contraception, they can negotiate for PrEP if they are sex workers, PrEP being pre-exposure prophylaxis, and post-exposure prophylaxis as well. Basically, gender empowerment, sexual reproductive health and rights, it's a marriage of necessity.
Do women know about these services?
there are a lot of dynamics that hinder them knowing. You talk of culture and religion. For example, in Zimbabwe, you have the apostolic sect, and they do not believe in education. They do not believe in going to hospitals. They do not believe in family planning. They do not believe in contraception. They promote child marriages, polygamy within their religious sect, where the main priest decides, oh, today I dreamt of Ashley as my wife, tomorrow that's it, just because they had a dream. Whether Ashley is 12 years old, not an issue. There are cultural situations where young women are offered the sacrifices, where you are then told, oh, you need to go and stay with the traditional healer as payment, so you have to be his wife as a sacrifice.
Sounds like discrimination.
It's a major disadvantage expressed through discrimination. Young lesbians who cannot access services because they are lesbians. You have young women who cannot express themselves sexually because as a woman, you cannot take initiative in the bedroom, you cannot take dance to say, I even want contraception at all.
More women are needed in religious leadership roles to help realize a new global plan to prevent future atrocity crimes. That's the view of Isabel Apawo-Piri, Deputy General Secretary for Public Witness at the World Council of Churches, or WCC, which is based in Geneva. She was at UN headquarters in New York to launch the so-called Fez Plan of Action, which is the result of 2 years of intense consultations with religious leaders and organizations aimed at preventing incitement to commit genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Ms. Piri outlined the most important recommendations to Matthew Wells.
There's a recognition that the faith community has power. For me, that's very important because recently there has been religious-motivated violence. Politicians are using religion to boost their own positions and therefore motivating violence in their countries. And I think it's wrong, and the WCC stands, you know, very firmly that that's not right.
Now, many religions, many denominations, of course, are fairly patriarchal.
Yes, yes.
Does this plan properly represent women's views and faith perspective, if you like?
You are right that religion and patriarchy, you know, go hand in hand. I've seen that there is a section, especially in the section on prevention, that is directly addressing the issues of how religion can prevent gender-based violence, which I think is very important.
Because, yes, of course, in some very conservative religious traditions, there is almost an encouragement of violence, especially,
yes,
in the domestic context,
unfortunately. Yes, yeah, and that's the unfortunate part of it, you know, that there are some people who use the scriptures, you know, to promote violence against women and children. And for me, that's not acceptable. Religion should be used to protect women and children.
And it also does seem that that many of those responsible for atrocity crimes are young men who are perverting faiths such as Islam and Christianity.
Yes.
What kind of role can women play, and mothers in particular, being, if you like, a bulwark against that kind of radicalization?
Yeah. It's not just mothers only. I think it's both mothers and fathers, you know, because these are our children. And from the beginning, we need to raise our children in such a way that they respect women. And for me, the most important person would be the father, to show the boys how to protect their mother and their sister. And when it comes to our places of worship, it's the religious leaders, because people respect religious leaders.
In terms of women religious leaders, I mean, clearly you'd like to see more of them.
Definitely, I would like to see more of them, because having more of them is a true reflection of what the society should be. God calls both men and women to become leaders, and we need to open these spaces so that people get used to the fact that, you know, what we did in the past was wrong, to exclude women from a religious leadership role.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.